Chapter 5. And no flower of the spring pass by us. Let us crown ourselves with rosebuds, before they be withered. Book of Wisdom. Pity that Ophenden was not the home of Miss Harleth's childhood, or endeared to her by family memories. A human life, I think, should be well rooted in some spot of a native land, where it may get the love of tender kinship for the face of earth, for the labors men go forth to, for the sounds and accents that haunt it, for whatever will give that early home a familiar unmistakable difference amid the future widening of knowledge. A spot where the definiteness of early memories may be inward with affection, and kindly acquaintance with all neighbors, even to the dogs and donkeys, may spread not by sentimental effort and reflection, but as a sweet habit of the blood. At 5 years old, mortals are not prepared to be citizens of the world, to be stimulated by abstract nouns, to soar above preference into impartiality, and that prejudice in favor of milk with which we blindly begin, is a type of the way body and soul must get nourished at least for a time. The best introduction to astronomy is to think of the nightly heavens as a little lot of stars belonging to one's own homestead. But this blessed persistence in which affection can take root had been wanting in Gwendolyn's life. It was only a year before her recall from Lubran that Ophenden had been chosen as her mama's home, simply for its nearness to Pennicott Rectory, and that Mrs. Davilow, Gwendolyn, and her four half-sisters, the governess, and the maid following in another vehicle, had been driven along the avenue for the first time, on a late October afternoon, when the rooks were crawling loudly above them, and the yellow elm leaves were whirling. The season suited the aspect of the old oblong red brick house, rather too anxiously ornamented with stone at every line, not excepting the double row of narrow windows and the large square portico. The stone encouraged a greenish lichen, the brick a powdery gray, so that though the building was rigidly rectangular there was no harshness in the physiognomy which it turned to the three avenues cut east, west, and south in the 100 yards breadth of old plantation encircling the immediate grounds. One would have liked the house to have been lifted on a knoll, so as to look beyond its own little domain to the long thatched roofs of the distant villages, the church towers, the scattered homesteads, the gradual rise of surging woods, and the green breadths of undulating park which made the beautiful face of the earth in that part of Wessex. But though standing thus behind, a screen amid flat pastures, it had on one side a glimpse of the wider world in the lofty curves of the chalk downs, grand steadfast forms played over by the changing days. The house was but just large enough to be called a mansion, and was moderately rented, having no manor attached to it, and being rather difficult to let with its somber furniture and faded upholstery. But inside and outside it was what no beholder could suppose to be inhabited by retired tradespeople, a certainty which was worth many conveniences to tenants, who not only had the taste that shrinks from new finery, but also were in that border territory of rank, where annexation is a burning topic. And to take up her abode in a house which had once sufficed for dowager countesses gave a perceptible tinge to Mrs. Davilow's satisfaction in having an establishment of her own. This, rather mysteriously to Gwendolyn, appeared suddenly possible on the death of her stepfather, Captain Davilow, who had for the last 9 years joined his family only in a brief and fitful manner, enough to reconcile them to his long absences. But she cared much more for the fact than for the explanation. All her prospects had become more agreeable in consequence. As he had disliked their former way of life, roving from one foreign watering place or Parisian apartment to another, always feeling new antipathies to new suites of hired furniture, and meeting new people under conditions which made her appear of little importance, and the variation of having passed 2 years at a showy school, where, on all occasions of display, as he had been put foremost, had only deepened her sense that so exceptional a person as herself could hardly remain in ordinary circumstances or in a social position less than advantageous. Any fear of this latter evil was banished now that her mama was to have an establishment. For on the point of birth Gwendolyn was quite easy. As he had no notion how her maternal grandfather got the fortune inherited by his two daughters. But he had been a West Indian, which seemed to exclude further question. And she knew that her father's family was so high as to take no notice of her mama, who nevertheless preserved with much pride the miniature of a Lady Molly in that connection. She would probably have known much more about her father, but for a little incident which happened when she was 12 years old. Mrs. Davilow had brought out, as she did only at wide intervals, various memorials of her first husband, and while showing his miniature to Gwendolyn recalled with a fervor which seemed to count on a peculiar filial sympathy, the fact that dear Papa had died when his little daughter was in long clothes. Gwendolyn, immediately thinking of the unlovable stepfather whom as he had been acquainted with the greater part of her life, while her frocks were short, said, "Why did you marry again, Mama? It would have been nicer if you had not." Mrs. Davilow colored deeply, a slight convulsive movement passed over her face, and straightway shutting up the memorials she said, with a violence quite unusual in her, "You have no feeling, child." Gwendolyn, who was fond of her mama, felt hurt and ashamed, and had never since dared to ask a question about her father. This was not the only instance in which she had brought on herself the pain of some filial compunction. It was always arranged, when possible, that she should have a small bed in her mama's room, for Mrs. Davilow's motherly tenderness clung chiefly to her eldest girl, who had been born in her happier time. One night under an attack of pain she found that the specific regularly placed by her bedside had been forgotten, and begged Gwendolyn to get out of bed and reach it for her. That healthy young lady, snug and warm as a rosy infant in her little couch, objected to step out into the cold, and lying perfectly still, grumbling a refusal. Mrs. Davilow went without the medicine and never approached her daughter. But the next day Gwendolyn was keenly conscious of what must be in her mama's mind, and tried to make amends by caresses which cost her no effort. Having always been the pet and pride of the household, waited on by mother, sisters, governess and maids, as if she had been a princess in exile, she naturally found it difficult to think her own pleasure less important than others made it, and when it was positively thwarted felt an astonished resentment apt, in her cruder days, to vent itself in one of those passionate acts which look like a contradiction of habitual tendencies. Though never even as a child thoughtlessly cruel, nay delighting to rescue drowning insects and watch their recovery, there was a disagreeable silent remembrance of her having strangled her sister's canary bird in a final fit of exasperation at its shrill singing which had again and again jarringly interrupted her own. As he had taken pains to buy a white mouse for her sister in retribution, and though inwardly excusing herself on the ground of a peculiar sensitiveness which was a mark of her general superiority, the thought of that infelonious murder had always made her wince. Gwendolyn's nature was not remorseless, but she liked to make her penances easy, and now that she was 20 and more, some of her native force had turned into a self-control by which she guarded herself from penitential humiliation. There was more show of fire and will in her than ever, but there was more calculation underneath it. On this day of arrival at Offenden, which not even Mrs. Davilow had seen before, the place having been taken for her by her brother-in-law, Mr. Gaskin, when all had got down from the carriage and were standing under the porch in front of the open door, so that they could have a general view of the place and a glimpse of the stone hall and staircase hung with somber pictures, but enlivened by a bright wood fire, no one spoke. Mama, the four sisters and the governess all looked at Gwendolyn, as if their feelings depended entirely on her decision. Of the girls, from Alice in her 16th year to Isabel in her 10th, hardly anything could be said on a first view, but that they were girlish, and that their black dresses were getting shabby. Miss Mary was elderly, and altogether neutral in expression. Mrs. Davilow's worn beauty seemed the more pathetic for the look of entire appeal which she cast at Gwendolyn, who was glancing round at the house, the landscape and the entrance hall with an air of rapid judgment. Imagine a young racehorse in the paddock among untrimmed ponies and patient hacks. "Well, dear, what do you think of the place?" said Mrs. Davilow at last, in a gentle, deprecatory tone. "I think it is charming," said Gwendolyn, quickly. "A romantic place. Anything delightful may happen in it. It would be a good background for anything. No one need be ashamed of living here. There is certainly nothing common about it. Oh, it would do for fallen royalty, or any sort of grand poverty. We ought properly to have been living in splendor, and have come down to this. It would have been as romantic as could be. But I thought my uncle and Aunt Gaskin would be here to meet us, and my cousin Anna," added Gwendolyn, her tone changed to sharp surprise. "We are early," said Mrs. Davilow, and entering the hall, she said to the housekeeper who came forward, "You expect Mr. and Mrs. Gaskin?" "Yes, madam. They were here yesterday, to give particular orders about the fires and the dinner. But as to fires, I've had them in all the rooms for the last week, and everything is well aired. I could wish some of the furniture paid better for all the cleaning it's had, but I think you'll see the brasses have been done justice to. I think when Mr. and Mrs. Gaskin come, they'll tell you nothing has been neglected. They'll be here at 5, for certain." This satisfied Gwendolyn, who was not prepared to have their arrival treated with indifference, and after tripping a little way up the matted stone staircase to take a survey there, she tripped down again, and followed by all the girls looked into each of the rooms opening from the hall, the dining room all dark oak and worn red satin damask, with a copy of Snarling, Worrying Dogs from Snyder's over the sideboard, and a Christ Breaking Bread over the mantelpiece, the library with a general aspect and smell of old brown leather, and lastly, the drawing room, which was entered through a small antecumber crowded with venerable knick-knacks. "Mama, Mama, pray come here," said Gwendolyn, Mrs. Davilow having followed slowly in talk with the housekeeper. "H, here is an organ. I will be St. Cecilia. Someone shall paint me as St. Cecilia. Jocosa, this was her name for Miss Mary, let down my hair. See, Mama?" As he had thrown off her hat and gloves, and seated herself before the organ in an admirable pose, looking upward, while the submissive and sad Jocosa took out the one comb which fastened the coil of hair, and then shook out the mass till it fell in a smooth light brown stream far below its owner's slim waist. Mrs. Davilow smiled and said, "A charming picture, my dear." Not indifferent to the display of her pet, even in the presence of a housekeeper. Gwendolyn rose and laughed with delight. All this seemed quite to the purpose on entering a new house which was so excellent a background. "What a queer, quaint, picturesque room," she went on, looking about her. "I like these old embroidered chairs, and the garlands on the wainscot, and the pictures, that may be anything. That one with the ribs, nothing but ribs, and darkness, I should think that is Spanish, Mama." "Oh, Gwendolyn," said the small Isabel, in a tone of astonishment, while she held open a hinged panel of the wainscot at the other end of the room. Everyone, Gwendolyn first, went to look. The opened panel had disclosed the picture of an upturned dead face, from which an obscure figure seemed to be fleeing with outstretched arms. "H, how horrible," said Mrs. Davilow, with a look of mere disgust. But Gwendolyn shuddered silently, and Isabel, a plain and altogether inconvenient child with an alarming memory, said, "You will never stay in this room by yourself, Gwendolyn. How dare you open things which were meant to be shut up, you perverse little creature," said Gwendolyn, in her angriest tone. Then snatching the panel out of the hand of the culprit, she closed it hastily, saying, "There is a lock, where is the key? Let the key be found, or else let one be made, and let nobody open it again, or rather, let the key be brought to me." At this command to everybody in general, Gwendolyn turned with a face which was flushed in reaction from her chill shudder, and said, Let us go up to our own room, Mama. The housekeeper, on searching, found the key in the drawer of the cabinet close by the panel, and presently handed it to Bugle, the lady's maid, telling her significantly to give it to Her Royal Highness. I don't know what you mean, Mrs. Starton, said Bugle, who had been busy upstairs during the scene in the drawing room, and was rather offended at this irony in a new servant. I mean the young lady that's to command us all, and well worthy for looks and figure, replied Mrs. Starton in propitiation. As she'll know what key it is. If you have laid out what we want, go, and see to the others, Bugle, Gwendolyn had said, when she and Mrs. Davilow entered their black and yellow bedroom, where a pretty little white couch was prepared by the side of the black and yellow catafalque known as the best bed. I will help Mama. But her first movement was to go to the tall mirror between the windows, which reflected herself and the room completely, while her mama sat down, and also looked at the reflection. That is a becoming glass, Gwendolyn. Or is it the black and gold color that sets you off? Said Mrs. Davilow, as Gwendolyn stood obliquely with her three-quarter face turned toward the mirror, and her left hand brushing back the stream of hair. I should make a tolerable St. Cecilia with some white roses on my head, said Gwendolyn. Why, how about my nose, Mama? I think saints' noses never in the least turn up. I wish you had given me your perfectly straight nose. It would have done for any sort of character a nose of all work. Mine is only a happy nose. It would not do so well for tragedy. Oh, my dear, any nose will do to be miserable within this world, said Mrs. Davilow, with a deep, weary sigh, throwing her black bonnet on the table, and resting her elbow near it. Now, Mama, said Gwendolyn, in a strongly remonstrant tone, turning away from the glass with an air of vexation, don't begin to be dull here. It spoils all my pleasure, and everything may be so happy now. What have you to be gloomy about now? Nothing, dear, said Mrs. Davilow, seeming to rouse herself, and beginning to take off her dress. It is always enough for me to see you happy. But you should be happy yourself, said Gwendolyn, still discontentedly, though going to help her mama with caressing touches. See, can nobody be happy after they are quite young? You have made me feel sometimes as if nothing were of any use. With the girls so troublesome, and Jocosa so dreadfully wooden and ugly, and everything makeshift about us, and you looking so dull, what was the use of my being anything? But now you might be happy. So I shall, dear, said Mrs. Davilow, patting the cheek that was bending near her. Yes, but really. Not with a sort of make-believe, said Gwendolyn, with resolute perseverance. See what a hand and arm. Much more beautiful than mine. Anyone can see you were altogether more beautiful. No, no, dear, I was always heavier. Never half so charming as you are. Well, but what is the use of my being charming, if it is to end in my being dull, and not minding anything? Is that what marriage always comes to? No, child, certainly not. Marriage is the only happy state for a woman, as I trust you will prove. I will not put up with it, if it is not a happy state. I am determined to be happy at least, not to go on muddling away my life as other people do, being, and doing nothing remarkable. I have made up my mind, not to let other people interfere with me as they have done. Here is some warm water ready for you, Mama, Gwendolyn ended, proceeding to take off her own Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.